Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 154, Dakinis and the Spa of Initiation.
And this is where there's this whole merging of the intuitee and the devotee. Or votary. Nowadays, I would change that. I will change that to votary. You know, like you have a votary lamp, you have a votary. It means you have like your devotion and all the language of vow and devotion and volition. All of those things are all interconnected, and I think it's the best. Some people say commitment. The commitment version is the one that you could, the commitment hero. But I prefer devotee hero myself, or votary hero. Because it's like when you make an icon, you draw the duplicate of the original into it, so that you can reach back to the original through the icon. So you know, because it's the anyway, never mind. Okay, so that's that. So now this is where we were here. So then you do this 12 offering goddess routine, which we had various forms of, which I don't repeat. And then now, these are really great mantras, which you have also from the. And I will put the proper diacriticals. You know, I didn't have symbols for them in the days when I did this. So, I mean, you know, I didn't have a Unicode thing that had diacriticals in it. They don't have all the diacriticals. It's very hard to do the long U and the long R. You have to write two R's, you know. So, these are the mantras that you said in the initiation when you asked for the 11 consecrations, or there's 15, actually. There's so many of them. But the first seven, right? They're like a childlike one, then there's the four, and then there's the four, the further four, you know? So it ends up as 15. But anyway, these are the mantras, and then this is what they say, and you're asking for them. And I wonder if there's the thing you say for the pride of it. I hope you have that. Yeah, then that starts after the seventh one. And then your expressions of pride are also there. That's very important. But they only start that on the seventh one. Okay? So let's read those together. And where you have two that seem to be the same, that means the second one is long. The vowel is long. So it's om, ham, ham, him, him, hum, hum. Hum hum, hum hum, I er those are short. Vaja dakinyao, vajamrta gathaya, abhishinjatu mama swaha. Okay, so let's read them together, okay? Om, slowly. Om ham ham, him him, hum hum, hum hum, hum hum, I er vaja dakinyao, vajamrta gathaya, abhishinjatu mama swaha. Abhishinjatu is imperative or optative case. In other words, may you, please do you. You know, it's not quite imperative, it's optative. Abhishinjatu means may you anoint me, mama. You know, mama is me, of me. May you make anointment of me. Mama is genitive, you know, of me. So, vajamrita gatair means by the vases of vajra elixir or vajra mead. I don't know why I like the word mead. It's an old-fashioned word, it's one syllable. Anyway, amrta. And vajra dakinyao, you're calling on the vajra dakinis to pour these from their vases filled with elixir to anoint you. So vajramata gatayar, you're in the spa of initiation. Asking for anointment. Okay, now let's read it again. Om ham ham, him him, hum hum, hum hum, hum hum, a e er u. Vajadakinyao Vajamata Ghatair Abhishinjatu Mama Swaha. Then you imagine that the five mothers, that they pour upon you, pronouncing themselves, Om A I R U L Panjadatu Vishodhani Swaha. When they, as they anoint you, they do that. So that what it is actually, if we ever get to do the familiarization retreat, and believe it or not, in the familiar, I know when you recite these things, like, what? I can remember things in 24 hands. I can feel like I have 3 throats, 4 faces, 3 shoulders, 6 upper arms, 12 lower arms, the different colors, all the beings, everything in every hand. I mean, it's like, oh my goodness. But if one does the even the familiarization retreat, which involves like a million or so mantras, then actually there's a point that happens where it comes effortlessly. You feel you can move into that sense of presence. Because after all, remember this, right now you're sitting here and you have a body with 10 fingers, you know, 2 arms, etc. But you're not really feeling all of your body. You know, if you have a wristwatch or rings or something, you don't pay attention to them all the time. You know, you're like whatever you're doing, you know. So you sort of panjabuddhatmakam. So here it is, all Buddha's Vajra crown for me, of mine. Panjabuddhatmakam, which is the nature of the 5 Buddhas. You know, there are 5 little Buddhas or little skulls which represent the 5 Buddhas, families. Atmakam, with the soul of the 5 Buddhas. Bandhayantu, may they bind it upon me. Bandhayantu means cause it to be bound on me. Swaha, and then he'll hail. And then you imagine that the 5 Buddhas, Amoghasiddhi, Ratnasambhava, Amitabha, Vairochana, and Akshobhya, are putting the crown upon your head. And you, and they say when they do it, Om A I R U L. Let's go. Om A I R U L. Panja Tathagata Parishuddha Swaha. So now you have the five Tathagata purification, total purification, all hail. Then you ask for the turban consecration, really turban. It's a ribbon. It's not really a turban. You can't put a turban on top of a crown. It's a ribbon. Why did I put that? It must have been in some other book. Ribbon consecration. Okay. Om ah ah ha ha ham ha prem ho. Sarva paramita mama vajrapatam bandayantu hum hum pe. Then you're calling here the 10 shaktis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But only 8 of them do you have outside syllables for. And remember the Vajra, the Vishvamata, the female Kalachakra is 2 shaktis. She herself is the 2 shaktis, probably prana and apana, I would guess from Richard's precept. And then the others are the other 8. Okay, so let's read together. Om ah ah ha ha ham ha prem ho sarva paramita mama vajrapatam bandayantu hum hum pe. Then they do that. They bind, they add this kind of ribbon which dangles over the crown. Om ah ah ham ha 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 ham ha ho prem dasha paramita paripurni swaha. So the 10 shaktis confer the ribbon consecration. Then you have the vajra and the bell consecration. Om hum ho. Let's go. Om hum ho. Vijnana jnana swabhave. Karuna prajnatmake, vajra vajra gante, savyetara karayor, mama vajra sattva sapranyo tadatu hum hum pe. So what that means is om hum ho, om hum ho, that's like the hum is the heart, ho is the navel, which is the male and female of the vajra sattva type couple. Vijnana jnana swabhave, who have the nature, whose consciousness has the nature of intuition. Vijnana jnana svabhave, karuna prajnatmake, who are the soul of compassion and wisdom. Vajra vajragante, the vajra and the vajra bell, in each of my hands, Vajrasattva with his wisdom, that is, with his consort, let him give them to me, hum hum pe. Okay? Let's read it again. Om hum ho, vijnana jnana svabhave, karuna pradnyatmake, vajra vajra gante, savyetarakarayor, mama vajrasattva sapradnyo dadatu hum hum pe. And then they say, then both Vajrasattva and the wisdom consort come and they say, Om Hum Ho Surya Chandra Vishodaka Swaha. And this also, the Vajra and Ganta, they purify moon and sun and moon, so your right and left channels, they purify them. Because, you know, Kala Chakra, although there is a big thing about central channel, one thing, a lot of the symbolism earlier in the Kala Chakra, initiation and in the creation stage or generation stage, has to do with the fact that in completion stage in Kala Chakra, you don't leave the body in a magic body, like a dream-type body that you do in other unexcelled yoga tantras at the very advanced reaches of creating a Buddha body and then merging into clear light and back and forth, you know, in the top three stages, the great perfection stages of the top three. And two and a half, really, the way they count them. And you don't do that, but you do it in the body. So actually, you find a new role for the right and left channels. You know, you find a new role for the coarse body. It's like the idea, it's like an alchemical thing. The dross of the meat space body is turned to the vajra body without leaving it. So that's why then the vajra and bell are associated with the right and left channels. Okay? Interesting. That's just a detail. So then you pray for the discipline consecration. Okay? Om A-A-E-I, R-R, O-Au, Al-Al, Am-Ah, Sarva-Bodhisattva, Sabariyaha, Sarvada, Sarva-Kama, Upabhogam, Vajra-Pratam, Mama, Dadantu, Swaha. So now you say, you invoke all of the 12 bodhisattvas, male and female. So bodhisattvas with their partners, always. Make them, let me enjoy all desires, all pleasures. Vajra Pratam, Mama, let them give me the Vajra discipline, or Vajra discipline. And the discipline now is to enjoy all sense pleasures. Because as I said, when you see something that's Kshitigarbha making love with in this balanced super love thing, not like the dissipating type of love, the akshara, indestructible type of bliss love, with the visual object, which is the goddess Rupa Vajra, the Buddha, Buddhas Rupa Vajra, so that all your sense experience is great bliss, void, indivisible, simply, not a distraction from that, in other words. That's the particular discipline. Om A-A, we did that already, right? With the Pratama Madarantu Swaha. Then they, saying, these 12, Om A-A-E-I-R-R-O-A-L-A-L-A-M-A-H Vishayendriya Vishodhani Swaha. Vishaya is the object and Indriya is the sense faculty. And Vishodhana is there totally pure, Swaha. So to the purification of all the sense objects and their faculties. The heroes and heroines confer the Vajra discipline consecration. Then now you pray for the name consecration. Okay. Om, Haha, Yaya, Rara, Wawa, Lala, Sarvakrodaraja, Sabarya. Yeah, that's all the fierce kings with their partners. Maitri Karuna Mudita Upeksha Sarva Samata Swabhavam, with all the universal equality nature of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Those are the four immeasurables. Swabhavam Bhaja Purvam Gamam Nama, preceding the Vajra condition of clear light, nama, the name, which precedes is preceded by the Vajra reality, that my name, give me my name, hum hum pe, right? May they give me my name. Nama, me is also in the form of genitive, or to me. So give me my name, hum hum pe, okay? So let's read that together. Om ha ha, ya ya, ra ra, va va, la la, sarva krodha raja, sabaryaha, maitri karuna mudita peksha, sarva samata svabhavam, Vajrapurvangamam nama medarantu hum pe. Then saying, then they come, these fierce deities, 10 of them usually, with 10 consorts. Ha ha ya ya ra ra wa wa la la chatu brahma vihara vishuddha swaha. Now they purify the places of the four pure abodes, which mean the four immeasurables, the brahma dwellings, vihara vishuddha swaha. So then that's the pure realm of pure form. Then the terrific fathers and mothers confer consecration. Then pray for the permission consecration. Om evam padma vajra chihnau pranopayau mandala dipati vajra sukha nyanangam mama dadatam ham ha hum pe. And here, with the signs of the lotus and the vajra, which these are the two sexual, om evam and evam, which also symbolizes the female and the male, padma and vajra as well, chihnau, pranopayau, wisdom and art. Wisdom being female, art being male. Prajnopayao, or art or method being male. Mandala dipati, the overlord of the overlords and lord, lady of the mandala. Vajasukha nyanamgam, that which has gone into the intuition of the vajra bliss. Dadatam, which is the reality itself. Dadatam, let them give me. Dadatam is a dual case. So it means let those two give that to me. That's male and female called chakra. Ham ha hum pe. So then they say, Om Hang Sha, Dharma Chakra Pravartaka Swaha. They give you permission to teach, to become a Vajra Acharya, to a teacher of the Vajra teaching, Dharma Chakra. Om Ahum, that's the Dharma wheel. Pravartaka means turner. Become turner of the Vajra wheel, they say to you. Swaha, that's the permission consecration. Thus having been manifestly consecrated, read it, thus having been manifestly consecrated by the seven consecrations, I become a lord of the seventh stage. And then you say, you lock in your pride, your Buddha pride, you say, Om Sarva Tathagata Sapta Abhisheka Sapta Bhumi Prapto Oham. Because if you realize the different things given to you, when eventually you do realize them, then you will be the equivalent of a seventh stage bodhisattva, which means you will have achieved the transcendent perfections of generosity, ethicality, tolerance, creativity, concentration, wisdom, and art. Upaya, in its deeper meaning, being art. Which is not just painting, but the art of life, the art of teaching, the art of helping beings, like healing or anything, building things. Okay? So that's your pride. Kalashabi. So you say, Sapta Abhisheka, Sapta Bhumi, the seventh stage. With the seven initiations, I have attained. Prapto means I have obtained. Sapta Bhumi, the seventh stage, Ham. So, and because all of these stage bodhisattva stages, although, you know, that's another definition of Tantra. Tantra is defined as what's called a goal vehicle. Sutra, the exoteric, all the exoterians are defined, although the boundary is not that hard and fast, actually. But all the exoteric teachings are defined as causal vehicle or means vehicle or method vehicle. So in other words, they are taught and practiced within the context that you are apart from the goal, seeking it, right? That's called a causal vehicle. You're accumulating the causes of the attainment of nirvana, you know, in the exoteric. It's a causal vehicle. A goal vehicle doesn't mean that just by being introduced to it, you automatically are a Buddha by being initiated. But it means that you are doing a practice where you are kind of imagining yourself the goal, and you are working on removing the veils of being at the goal. So you are putting yourself in a sort of different kind of stress, actually, creative, you know, practicers, you know, evolutionary stress, where you're saying Buddhahood is here. The 10 bodhisattva stages are really, they're not elsewhere, they're here. But I don't know that they're here. Like clear light I'm made of. Nirvana is here, but I don't know it. So what I'm doing is trying to remove the impediments to knowing what is here. So it's the context, by putting yourself in that context, a goal vehicle context. It's still a vehicle, in other words, you're not there, but you are putting yourself where you're using being there as a vehicle to get there, if I can say such a little bit paradoxical thing. So this gives you a kind of certain different kind of intensity. It gives you a certain kind of, I think, it could give you, if you were way beginner, you know, or any kind of what they call outsider, had no idea of any such evolution, it could give you a false sense of complacency. Like the lady who said, what, I have to do all this? I got the initiation, what else? Because in the initiation you say, well, I'm on the seventh stage, I'm on the tenth stage, you know, I'm Kala Chakra. So that was it. But no, that's just the entry to the goal vehicle. And it's like the non-dualistic teaching, you know, that you are in nirvana, actually, but you don't know it. So it's, which creates a different sense of fallback. It gives you a different kind of confidence. And if you really feel it or imagine it, you know, then that gives you a different intensity of motivation, this idea. Okay? So that's why it's considered very powerful and effective at the right time for the person with the right foundational understanding, which is why we always go back to it. That's why Dalai Lama, in the initiation, he says, ha ha, I tricked you. I taught you the Bodhicharya Avatara, the introduction to the Bodhisattva life, you know, which you wouldn't have come in the 400,000 of you to do that. You came for the initiation. But most of you can't use the initiation much. But boy, you can use compassion teaching of and wisdom teaching of Shantideva. Boy, oh boy. That's what you really got here that really helps you. So we go back to it. That's why on the first day today, I did the three principal paths again. And that's why we should meditate that as a preliminary, always. When we did long familiarization retreats with lamas, we always did some version of the Lamrim first. In every session, you know, and then did recite the sadhana, you know, because that you need that, you know.
This podcast was originally live streamed from the Kali Chakra Practice and Study Retreat at Menla in Phoenicia, New York, July 24, 2017, and was brought to you in part for the generous support of the Tibet House U.S. membership community and listeners like you. To access the full live stream archives, please visit the Tibet House U.S. membership archives at tibethouse.us. Free previews from the live stream archives are available on the Tibet House US YouTube channel. And now back to Bob with the second half of this week's podcast.
Final Tantra, I've had arguments with lamas how Shakyamuni taught Tantra in the Theravada literature, in the Theravada, the things recorded in Pali as the Theravada suttas. He was teaching Tantra there. How can you say that? No way. No, those disciples were dualists and blah, 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 blah. They go on like that. And then my arguments is the story of Yashas. Yashas was the first yuppie disciple of the Buddha, lay person, young lay person. And he, you know, not a seeker, in other words, you know, not a yogi. And Yashas came to there are different versions of the story, of course, but the one that I like is where he's teaching Tantra, is he had been out partying with his buddies with some courtesans, some escorts. They were wealthy, so high level, out in the garden somewhere, in the forest, in some idyllic place outside of Rajagarha, I think. And they were rolled. They were drugged, the wine was drugged, and all their American Express cards and their jewelry and their crowns and all their ornaments and their silks and everything, they just had their, like, undies. And he was running through the forest asking everybody, have you seen them girls, you know, carrying something? He's an old man. He's freaked out and he's hungover and drugged and staggering. And he happens to bump into Buddha, who conveniently, so clairvoyantly, is sitting there under the tree, you know. And he comes to Buddha and he says, have you seen those girls with the things? And this guy's sitting there. And Buddha says, no. I says, but would you rather find the girls and your clothes and jewels, or would you rather attain nirvana? And the guy says, oh, nirvana, of course. And he sits down, and in 8 hours, he's in nirvana. He's an arhat. You know, they did dualistic type, you know, nirvana. Now, if that isn't walking into a mandala and being overwhelmed by the atmosphere and by the vibe of the mandala, I don't know what is. It certainly isn't just bumping into a weird guy sitting there with a red, with an orange shawl on, meditating. It's walking into a field, you know, that's a mandalic field, you know, an alternative reality. Right? Oh, nirvana, of course. Forget of my greater card and everything. Oh, okay, nirvana. That, I love that. So that's one of the arguments I use. So the main argument I use, which really gets them, is the four immeasurables and the four formless realms. Turn them upside down, and they're the eight dissolution stages of the Book of the Dead and of Tantra going to the clear light. Do you get it? Infinite love is the earth, is lojana. That's the Buddha lojana, and it's the earth element. So earth into water, right? Infinite compassion, immeasurable compassion, is mamaki, and who's the water element, and who is immeasurable compassion. Immeasurable joy is pandaravasini, who is the fire element. Immeasurable wind is samayatara, who is the wind element. And then you have then space, right? Then the moonlit space is when you just space, and it's luminous, but there's nothing bright. It's kind of like a, you know, neon moon-like luminosity, it's from the sense of you're being used to be surrounded by objects, then you are one with this vastness object, which is in this thing like that. But then, because you are used to wanting to control and comprehend where you are always, that's your drive. Your consciousness expands and explodes in that space, and then that makes it hot, and it becomes the red sunlight radiance. So that's luminance radiance. Then the heat becomes too much for you. Then you want to sleep. You want darkness. You want to be you don't want to be conscious of that. You go into the dark lit immanence, and then you go into beyond consciousness and unconsciousness, which is clear light. But it's at a coarse level. Those lamas who finally lose to those geshes, who finally lose to me in this debate, they say, well, okay, it's like similar, but it's the coarse mind, so it's not the same thing. I said, of course, I didn't say it was the same thing. I said it was a hint to those dualistic guys who couldn't be told this is nirvana, but it was a hint that this is the stage of getting to this place with the clear light. But he's not saying clear light then will turn out to be, instead of isolated from all form, it will be everywhere. He's not going to say that. Of course not. And actually, you can stay in that red horizon of the clear light if you have a big ego thing about it, and you're identifying, this is me, and no, I don't need anybody else, and then you can have your psycho version of the clear light. Nice, comfortable, happy psycho in the clear light. They're all by themselves. No mom, no girlfriend, no boyfriend, nothing. Just all by myself. Yeah, well, he doesn't exist either, so who cares? And this is very key. In the thing, we get some kind of yogurt, right? But what it is, in the reality of the secret consecration, is that that's the imagining, the reality of it for just a few people or a single disciple, is the disciple has their own female partner. That female partner has to have, if the disciple is male, if it's female, she has her own male partner. Both of the partners actually have to be at the same yogic and understanding and realizational level to receive it. You know, this is sort of the ideal level of this whole process. Then the guru, if his guru is male, which is what is always assumed in the culture, in the Mishovanist culture, then the disciple offers the partner to the guru. The guru unites with the partner. Then they both, but they both are, they're doing this undissipated thing, so there's no ejaculation, there's no normal orgasm, just a genital, you know, clonistic orgasm. But both of them are generated, they're red, she the red, he the white, bodhicitta. And then they part, and the seed that is at the tip of the interconnectedness of their two genitalia is taken, and it's tucked on the tongue of the disciple and the disciple's consort. And what this signifies is that now one has new parents, and the new parents are Kala Chakra, father, mother. And one's old genetic thing of the red seed from the mother and the white seed and the chromosomes, whatever, from the parents is sort of superseded by this new gene. And this new gene, then one becomes a child of Buddha, a child of the Buddha family, of the Kala Chakra family. And it's actually a genetic replacement, in a way, you could say. So it goes beyond. And I believe, my personal thought about this, is that the Tibetan people and eventually then the Mongolian people, to an extraordinary extent, in among human nations, tribes, nations, whatever you want to call it, sort of tribes expanded to nations, have the least interest in ancestors of any Asian people, for sure. And actually, you know, if you go to Boston and visit some WASPy house, and I have a bunch of them, but I don't put them on the wall, and you're in the front hall there where you take off your coat and your galoshes and things, there'll be this picture of some really funky-looking old whaler with a beard like, oh, I have, and some poor wife who looks like this. And like, you know, from the late 18th, early 19th century, something like that. And they're like, it's their like ancestor worship place. You know, they don't have a ritual to offer them cookies and tea like in China. But in a way, you can say that an anchor of racism is the idea of your blood is your thing, you know, is identifying with your gene, the blood of your parents, you know, blood and bone. The Tibetans would say the white and red element, the blood and the bone, blood from the mother, bone from the father, and the white element from the father. And the Tibetans, not that all the Tibetans were doing Tantra, but a lot of them were. And therefore, they were constantly visualizing their ancestors as the spiritual heirs, like Atisha, Tsongkhapa, Papa, not mom and dad as much. I mean, of course, they still have mom and dad, and they still teach, you know, a little bit of filial piety, but it's not the huge thing that it is in China, Japan, Korea, and even India with the upper caste people. And that is something interesting, and I think it's because in the core of the morphic resonance of the culture, a lot of people were visualizing themselves as having a new set of parents, which are in the alternative universe of Kala Chakra, Guhya Samaj, Hevajra, whatever it is. In Dzogchen, they have all their kadye, what they call, the eight tantras before they get into Dzogchen. So all the different orders have this, and it's something really interesting, I think. It reinforces what karma already did in Asia and why Asia was more gentle than Europe, and therefore why European colonialism was able to conquer Asia before that Islamic colonialism was able to conquer it. The difference being that the Islamic one, they settled down in the country, so they circulated the wealth inside. The European was the first to extract it from the Asian countries, and which made it more predatory. But the reason they were able to is that the karma theory already weakens the sense of connection to the blood parents, because you could be born in every other race previous time. And your ancestor is not up there waiting for a cookie and a cup of tea and a little ritual in a happy hunting ground. Your ancestor is yourself, is your friend. Grandpa, oh, grandpa, grandma, there you are. Oh, Mike, oh, you went to Andover. Stupid ancestor. But I'm saying that sense of piety about the blood thing is diffused all over being. You see, because you don't know where grandpa is, you know, you don't know where, but everybody's mom, you focus on, even grandpa's was mom in some other previous life. So karma eroded the tribalism, the lethality of the tribalistic thing, which, you know, still the militaristic drum beaters in America and Russia and everywhere are beating to keep their people enthralled in police state. So they and big armies to pretend to be after the other person, but which they used to be really after the other person. Now they can't because everybody has nukes, you know, and so you can't attack someone like that. You can sort of try to destroy their entire country. That's all. Cannot really war as defined by von Clausewitz, the Prussian, as diplomacy by other means, is no longer available because the enemy will not be of any use to you if you defeat them, because what defeat is means obliterate their country. So that only will produce the few people who survive will become terrorists. They'll be so pissed off. And they'll never sow something for you or give you some oil or whatever. You can steal some stuff off the surface, but then they're done, and then you're just worried about their terrorists. There's no winning, in other words. You can't win that kind of war. The war meant you defeat the enemy's soldiers. You don't even slaughter all of the army of the enemy. They surrender at some point. They hang their sword. Maybe a couple of really bad actors you might execute, but otherwise you send them home. Then you put them to work in the field and you get a better price on the corn that they grow. That's a war had a purpose. No longer has a purpose because you obliterate the cornfields. And then they're mad. You kill their granddaughter, their mother, their grandmother, and they're going to blow up your tower. So anyway, so this is the root, this second initiation, the secret initiation, which is the genetic initiation, where you are in a different gene flow. It doesn't mean you don't like your parents, you don't care about them, but it means that you, again, the priority is relativized, and then your spiritual parent. And I learned this from a shrink who was a great person, actually, and he's still there. He's a dean at Emory University in Atlanta now. He wrote a book called The Tibetan Symbolic World. And he made a lot of wrong things about Tibet. He was a psychiatrist, you know, and he had a wife who was an anthropologist. But he didn't get, so it was a book that, you know, some Dharma people will snot about because some of the data is wrong. But he brilliantly looked at the life of Milarepa. He brilliantly discovered, because of his Oedipal lens that he's looking for as a psychiatrist, that one of the underlying driving motifs in Milarepa's story is that all the blood lineages in Tibet of the main characters go to rack and ruin. Milarepa has no children. His sister has no children. His mother, he's dispossessed. And his uncle, he kills off his uncle's lineage who dispossessed him, and he has no progeny. And then even Marpa's blood child doesn't get anywhere because he disobeys the Dakini and gives him some teachings he shouldn't have, and then he dies prematurely. So all blood lineages sort of come to a difficult samsaric end, but the spiritual lineage of Marpa, Naropa, Tilopa, the spiritual parents, Tilopa, Naropa, Marpa, Milarepa, Gampopa, Rechungpa, etc., and the yoginis, you know, in the Repa band, this is totally fruitful. It becomes the Kagyu order, you know, a huge family all over Tibet for a century. But the bloodline goes to rack and ruin. So there's a subliminal message there to go into the Dharma family, you know, away from the Bodhisattva family, the Dharma family, away from the blood family, the tribal family. It's really marvelous. And it fulfills what the karma biological theory already did to the masses, which is make them feel more related to the others and therefore harder to pump them up into what the anthropologists called pseudo-speciation, meaning you make another tribe into an inhuman thing that you can then exterminate righteously for your blood of your parents, you know, whatever, you know, the great racist thing, you know, right? Holocaust, the Holocaust of the samsara, all the Holocausts of the samsara have come from that. So this is antidote, actually. Even though it seems a little funky. Take a little seed. And you have to have the red. They all act like it's just the semen, but it isn't. It's the red seed also from the vagina of the mother, not just the white seed, both. Whatever that fertility thing is. Ovum, I call it. They say menstrual blood. That's so nasty of them. It's ovum. Okay, well, there's no word for it, I think. Before it's discharged as menstrual blood. What's it called? An egg? But what is that type of blood that is fertile, that forms that egg? What's that called? Uterine blood? I think maybe technical term is uterine blood. What? What's it called?
Endometrial.
I never have had a satisfactory word. I don't know. But I call it ovum. I made up a word. Ovum.
That's fine.
That's okay? Oh, thank you. Get the duck and his stamp of approval.
Weekly interstitial music provided by Tenzing Chogyal. Used with the artist's permission, all rights reserved. To learn more, please visit his website at tenzingchogyal.com. This episode was recorded at the annual Tibet House U.S. Kali Chakra Study and Practice Intensive held at Menla in Phoenicia, New York, each year. To learn more about this Buddhist intensive with Robert Thurman and friends, please visit menla.us. To learn more about Tibet House US and the benefits of becoming a member, please visit tibethouse.us. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode, and we hope to see you on March 3rd at Carnegie Hall as Philip Glass hosts his annual Tibet House US benefit concert and party. For ticket information and guest lineup, please visit tibethouse.us. Tashi Dalek.